Well, the big news yesterday as the PM Malcolm Turnbull set the stage for a potential double dissolution election. Part of this was bringing the budget forward a week. So what will the future hold? Will Australia continue to buck the trend and stay in a relatively healthy economic position, or will it all go south? George Megalogenis tackles this question in the latest quarterly essay, Balancing Act, Australia Between Recession and Renewal. He outlines the challenge for the Turnbull government and warns that something different must be done if Australia is to avoid facing the kind of economic crisis other countries have experienced. And George joins me on the line this morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good, Mitch. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Thank you for asking. So in the essay, you talk about the reliance on the open market model because it's worked in the past. But looking globally, this system doesn't seem to be working. So does Australia need a new model? And if so, where does it come from?
Yeah, the model that we've sort of grown used to, and that's the one that Bob Hawke and Paul Keating put down in the 80s and John Howard and Peter Costello sort of fine-tuned in the 90s, leaves it to the floating dollar, interest rates set by the Reserve Bank, wages set at the enterprise level between employer and employee, and very low tariff also, no protection for local manufacturers. That model, when you sort of tote it all up, is one of the reasons why the economy's been growing without the interruption of the deep recession for the last 25 years. But you're right. When you look around the world, there's a couple of parts of the sort of global capital system that are just not working. We know that there's been a big crisis which began in the U.S. in 2008 with the collapse of their housing market, and then the big subprime crisis became a sort of global debt crisis. Now that crisis has gone from the U.S. to Europe, and it's threatening China now. One of the problems that we've got as a country, even though we're still growing, is that we've got very, very little left in the bank in the event of another shock. So the budget's no longer in surplus, which it was in 2008 when we sort of got through the GFC. We don't have interest rates that we can cut anymore. They're very, very low. They're actually at lower levels than they were in sort of that emergency period in 2008-09. Mm-hmm. The wages system's not really doing all that much for people. They haven't had a decent pay rise in a few years. And you know, with the rise of China and a lot of power shifting to Asia, a lot of our local businesses are not as competitive as they might have once been. So when I sort of look at this equation, something's missing, and the thing that's missing, I think, is an active government, a government that steps in to do things that the market can't do in terms of infrastructure and especially education. Where whilst it looks good at the moment on paper, you can see things going wrong very quickly. If we sort of try to muddle through, sort of leave things as they are.
Yeah, you mentioned infrastructure there, and in the essay you talk about the lack of infrastructure as a great disappointment and even a squandered opportunity. You're in the car at the moment heading to the airport. Many people drive around Sydney right now. They probably agree with you. But why has this been such an issue that it hasn't had the investment you think it needs?
Yeah, well, it should never have happened, but it sort of, once the first mistake was made, it was very hard to correct. So for the last 10 or 15 years, our population, especially in Melbourne at the moment, especially a city like Melbourne and more recently in Sydney, huge population growth, but very little done by government to build ahead of that growth. So, you know, we don't have new rail lines. We don't have sort of increased capacity in terms of train carriages. The road system is still not all joined up. And you look at the situation. If you sort of went back in a time tunnel and maybe grabbed Bob Carr and maybe grabbed Steve Brax in Victoria and said, "Listen, people, this is what our city is going to look like in the next 10 or 15 years. You know, they'll still be right up at the top of the sort of livability rankings, but they're about to reach this point now where it becomes difficult to get from A to B. And we know that that's really been the story in Sydney for the last few years. Mm. And in Melbourne now, we've sort of stopped comparing property prices, which used to be the Sydney conversation. Now we talk about how long it gets. How long it takes to get from A to B. And I think now when you look at, you know, we're coming off the end of the second mining boom. That mining boom peaked in about 2011. There are going to be a lot of blue-collar workers who have sort of enjoyed very high salaries in that sort of long boom phase who've suddenly become unemployed if government doesn't find something else for them to do. And when I argue for infrastructure, I'm not arguing for infrastructure as a make-work scheme. It's actually got an economic benefit attached to it, because if you can clear congestion in the cities, especially in Sydney and Melbourne, you'll actually improve the productivity of these cities. You actually keep them as sort of these, you know, sort of gold standard, very livable cities by when you compare them to other cities in the world. But when you do look around the world and you see the populations cross that 3 to 4 million, from 3 to 4 million to about 4 to 5 million, that's when you start to get the problems of gridlock. Mm. We're already seeing it. And unless we do something now, and by now I mean, you know, you almost have to reconfigure the way government functions to be able to do these things, I place more priority on building and service delivery and sort of less on that sort of politicking that they do, which is sort of, they spend a lot of time talking about themselves, they spend a lot of time arguing between federal and state jurisdictions. Unless you get that step change now, you know, we'll all be saying, I told you so, in about 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, and just one last question, George. Were you surprised by Malcolm Turnbull's actions yesterday? And what do you sort of predict will be in his first budget being delivered a week early? What do you hope it'll include?
Well, obviously I hope that there is a big infrastructure fund in there. I actually know he's looking at this stuff now, so it's quite an interesting point at which to be feeding this essay into the debate. When I look at what he did yesterday felt like, you know, Paul Keating had returned. Suddenly you had a Prime Minister surprising everybody, looking like he was in charge. It was quite a bold move, though, so I'm still trying to figure out what's his best-case scenario. Is his best-case scenario the double dissolution? Probably is. But what happens if the Senators find a way to pass this legislation? Or what happens if Labor finds a way to slow things down so the bills don't actually get to a final vote? There's still the possibility for this thing to go pear-shaped, but at the moment it looks like he's sort of taken what became very low expectations of him, flipped them completely, and you're looking at him again with fresh eyes.
Mm. Well, I will leave it there, but George, thanks so much for talking to us this morning.
Appreciate that. Thanks for your time.
That is George Megalogenis.